You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, everybody, to your favorite day of the week. I am Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Adam Morris, and this is Locked On NBA. Hey, Adam, the NBA released their list of marquee games and their games that everybody is looking forward to. You have to be pretty excited to watch the Nuggets on big nights, right?
You know, the bad part about your joke, Anthony, is as soon as you started talking, I could tell where this was going. it was very telegraphed. You know what I will say? I am very excited to have Christmas Day off for like the 34th time in a row. This is great. Very excited for that.
I haven't had a Christmas off in ever.
Like, the Lakers have just been so good that you have to put those good teams on there. You can't miss out on Brooke Lopez and
my favorite thing when the new schedule came out were Lakers fans complaining about the Knicks being on national TV. Like, guys, we got to have a little more self-awareness like than that.
Not to mention that game starts at what, 9 o'clock?
Yeah,
West Coast time. You guys, come on. Yeah, come on.
All right, so today's show, we're going to talk about those marquee matchups, and then by the time some of you guys listen to this, the NBA's full schedule will have been released, so we're going to talk about some stuff that we're looking forward to there, and then as we've done the last few weeks, we are going to celebrate the NBA with five things that we really like, and as following tradition, I didn't have my five ready to go at the beginning of the show, and I thought Adam was going to punch me through my computer. Let's talk about these marquee games though. Okay. Is there anything? So I found it interesting, or did you find it interesting, that the Lakers aren't involved with opening night at all?
At first, yes, but then the league always does this where they have one of their marquee teams that doesn't play their first game until Thursday, and I think the reason for that is you keep anticipation. Opening night basically becomes a three-day event at this point, right? You have the Tuesday opener, which is like a soft opener. There's only two games.
Yep.
Then you have Wednesday when everybody plays except for maybe two or three teams. And then Thursday you get the Lakers debut. So you basically own Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of that week. That's the reason they do it. Friday too, because there's a full slate as well. So I'm a little surprised. And at first I thought it was ridiculous, but now I'm not. What I am looking forward to is, what are the odds Portland plays on Wednesday before going home to host the Lakers on Thursday? I would put the odds at like 10 to 1. It's happening. Portland is going to have like a 10. They won't even be at home. They'll be at Sacramento, 10:30 Eastern time start. They'll have to fly to Portland to play the Lakers the next day and get killed. That's just how it works.
They should make it really obvious and have them play like Miami.
Yeah, just don't hide it. They're opening with a one-game road trip to Miami. Back to back the following night back home.
Yeah, I'm cool with that. They'll stomp the Lakers, though. The Lakers can't win in Portland. Like, every Laker fan listening to this right now will say, I hate playing in Portland. It's just one of those things.
Well, I'm glad that's where they will start off. But no, it is cool. I actually like it. Them being on Thursday, they're the one team that everybody wants to see the most.
Yep.
Like, casual fans, diehard, whatever, and all the Laker fans in the world want to see the most. So holding them to Thursday is smart. Having it gives the rest of the start of the season, you know, some oomph, and then it gives them kind of a second burn there. But what about the rest of the slate? What do you think of opening night? That Tuesday, that Tuesday is really the marquee open.
Yeah,
we have our marquee teams, don't we?
I really like that the NBA is trying to get the Sixers and Celtics rivalry going.
First of all, it is. What do you mean trying? To me, I'm invested in that rivalry.
Yeah.
Because I thought the Sixers were better than the Celtics all the way until they weren't in the playoffs. And now I'm convinced that the Celtics just own them. And it's ridiculous how reactionary I am being to this. But I'm all in. I'm all in on this rivalry.
I really hope that Horford plays Embiid off the floor one more time so that everybody's just like, oh, my God, what is going on? Because everybody overreacts to the first night of basketball or the first like week of basketball. Everybody, like, the Lakers are probably going to be 0-2 because they play Portland and then Houston.
Oh my gosh, here we go. Here we go. Okay.
No, they're going to be 0-2 and everybody's going to be like, "Oh, see? LeBron made the wrong choice, everybody. Duh. How didn't we see this coming?" And I can't wait for that. But I also I also really, really, really like the Thunder Warriors matchup.
I do too.
It's such a good matchup. It's the Warriors. The Thunder present some problems for Golden State, and now the Thunder don't have Carmelo Anthony's waterlogged course holding them back.
I think the Warriors still win that game, although you never know with the opening night of the season if the Warriors are in shape or whatever is going on there. But I like that one too, because I think OKC Golden State is the ultimate of what we have right now. To me, that's the biggest sort of contrast of style, contrast of personalities, contrast of cities, contrast, just everything. You know, there's some and there's some legitimate, maybe not bad blood, because I do think it's kind of theatrical, the Russ KD thing. But I think there's at least a little bit of a, is there, would Russ want anything more than to dethrone Golden State, even if they don't win the championship, just to beat them fair and square? So I like that rivalry, and I like them being on the opening night. I think they got it right for opening night. I saw a lot of complaints. Those are the two games I would have picked.
Yeah, my two cents were, like, regarding the Lakers, is that they kept them off there, as you said, because everybody's going to watch the Lakers whenever they start their season anyway. And they started.
They could have played the Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah, and they couldn't. And actually, that's kind of where I thought that they missed an opportunity here. Like, it would have been nice to have them play, say, Milwaukee, or, you know, one of the teams really be elevating, but aren't apparently in this one. And then the other thing too is, like, the NBA knows that everybody's going to tune in for that first game with LeBron as a Laker, and then they're also going to want to tune into his first home game. So those are two games in which they can elevate whoever they're playing. And again, like, Houston's fine, like, it's fine, it's an okay matchup, but I think they should have done a little bit more to elevate one of the more, like, Utah, for example. I think that would have been a better matchup than Houston. We're going to take go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say, Houston's a tough first game for the Lakers solely because Houston knows who they are and what they're going to do. And the Lakers, I think, are going to have that two-week learning curve.
Yeah.
So I could see that game getting out of hand.
Yeah. Although, I mean, you never know. Harden is round.
Also, you want to talk about unfair schedule. You're sending the Rockets to L.A. Friday night. For the first week of the schedule, you're sending Harden to L.A. on a Friday night to hang out and then play a Saturday game. I mean, come on.
The league knows what they're doing. They're going to send Portland to Miami and then Houston to L.A. for an extra night. All right, we're going to take a quick second here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the schedule that is yet to drop at the time that we're recording this. Stuff to look forward to, all that good stuff here in a second. All right, Adam, the schedule has not yet dropped while we're recording, but we know who everybody plays everybody, so it's pretty easy to get excited for certain aspects. Is there anything in particular, or what's at the top of your list of things that you're really looking forward to?
I want to see who gets screwed. There's always a handful of teams that get screwed, and look, the Nuggets last year
spoken like a true
season.
Nuggets fan.
Well, they had a 15-game road trip to end the season, which, you know, it was, I think, a little strange that that's how it'd be. But I think the team that actually got screwed last year was the Atlanta Hawks. The Atlanta Hawks did not have their home opener until 2 weeks after the season began. They started with five straight road games spread out over 2 weeks, and Denver actually played them. The reason I remember this is because Denver played their home opener, and I remember being like, this is the home opener? We're so far. I think the Nuggets were like 9 games into the season at that point. So I want to see which team gets screwed. That's always the first thing that's kind of fun to look forward to, be like, oh, man, look at that. OKC has a 12-game road trip somewhere in January. That doesn't make any sense.
I'm really looking forward to they keep on working on ways to either extend the season, try to make sure that there are fewer situations of 4-game and 5 nights kind of thing. And there's always one fan base that just screams about how they get screwed each and every year. It's usually Portland.
This is such a contrast, because I'm looking forward to seeing who gets screwed and fully aware of how real it is that a team gets screwed. And you, as a Laker reporter, fan, whatever you want to say, has never been screwed. Because can you imagine the Lakers starting 2 weeks of the season on the road and not having home game? Of course you can't. because it would never happen.
But what I'm saying, though, is that I'm not I would acknowledge that the Lakers are not going to get put in that kind of situation. But I don't think it's the same team year in, year out that gets.
Oh, no. They divided up. It's for sure.
It's the same.
Yeah.
It's the same kinds of teams. It's the same.
You are everything you're saying is correct. You're right about that.
and every year you hear the people up in Portland screaming like they screwed us again. Like, no, I mean, you screwed yourself with your cap.
I want to see the national TV schedule as well because, yeah, you know, the Lakers had what, 60 games on national television last year and they were terrible. I don't know how you can get more, but they have
82.
LeBron James. Yeah, honestly, what's a realistic number? 60, 67? 74? I mean,
I think it's capped, isn't it? It's not.
It's that they can't have more than that.
Yeah, like they. Because, like, the Lakers have their big TV deal. So, like, they literally can't put them on national TV that much. Yeah. That's why blackouts exist. I think, man, the one that I really want to see here, I think the Lakers will play like 50 games on national TV between TNT, ESPN, ABC, and then NBA TV. But the one that I really want to see is, and it's something that I kind of credit the NBA for a lot more than, say, baseball, where, like, the only national TV games are Boston and New York. It's only Red Sox, Yankees at all times. And I think one thing that the NBA kind of gets credit for, and they should, is the effort that they're making to elevate some of these organizations, some of these franchises, and I think they need to continue doing that. I want to see, yep, more Jokic this year. I want to see more Giannis this year, and we'll see how they do that.
Yeah, I'm certainly interested in that, and I do think I do think some of those guys, it takes an extra year or two for them to earn a claim, rather than if they were in, like, New York per se. Like, Porzingis walked into the league a superstar. But I do think it's going to swing the tide. I'm interested in seeing Toronto at San Antonio. I want to see when that game is. I don't think that the NBA has it for a special moment or anything like that. I'm guessing it's just a random Thursday night somewhere in the schedule. But I want to know how when that is, because that's a game I'm going to circle on the calendar. Kawhi's first return to San Antonio. Are the fans going to boo him? Is he going to do? Is he going to drop 50 on the Spurs? You know, is it going to be one of those, like, where he feels a revenge? To me, that's one of the best games of the year.
Do you think if the fans do boo him, would it be okay for them to do so?
Everything's fair in sports. I think, you know, we don't really know the answers, I think, to that. I've gone back and forth with my opinion about, you know, oh, it's the Spurs' fault, it's Kawhi's fault or whatever. I think we just don't know enough. I mean, I'll say I personally don't know enough to say one way or another. But you know what? Fans, to me, booing, cheering, that kind of stuff, that's within the lines to me. That's all within the boundaries. And, you know, you can boo somebody and not hate them. It's just you're rooting for your team to go. So yeah, I think Spurs fans have been very loud and vocal, and I hope they do boo him. I think it'd be fun.
I also hope they boo him. Because, like, honestly, I've never understood the shaming of booing. Like, it's one thing if a player gets traded. Like, when Lakers fans booed D'Angelo Russell, like, he was traded. He had no say in the matter. He was surprised by the trade. He didn't demand anything. But in this situation, Kawhi utilized his player agency and forced his way out of San Antonio, and he's perfectly within his right to do that. Now, contractually, that our buddy Kirk would disagree, but he was in his right to do that, just like I think San Antonio fans are going to be right to boo him in that night. Similar thread, similar thing to look forward to. I want to see how Laker fans treat Paul George on his first.
I didn't even think of that one, but that's a great one.
It'll be interesting, and I think they'll boo him. I'm going to boo him because of the documentary series that he did that he made us watch. It was terrible. but again, like, same question. Do you think if Laker fans boo him, how would you feel about that?
I mean, I hate Lakers, you know, everything that they do. So, but no, again, it's fair. I think it's fun. And, you know, Russ is an L.A. guy. Those are good teams with a lot of star power. It's a contrast to style fight. I think you got a great defense versus what I think will be a very interesting and good offense. So I like that matchup. And, yeah, I hope there is at least a little bit of bad blood. The Pelicans and Lakers is another one that I like. Ooh, for one, the Pelicans play really fast. Julius Randle's return. I have a feeling Randle is going to approach that game with an enormous chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to guard him that night.
So that's a game I have circled. Luka Doncic's debut, I think, will be a lot of fun. With rookies, I think there's a lot of hype in October, maybe early parts of November. You almost forget about them from December, January, and then you kind of remember at the end of the year when they start to put it together.
Rookie of the year races start getting closer and more real. And
yeah.
Do you think it'd be too mean to have their first game be against or in Sacramento?
No, it'd be fun. And actually, the league did that, right, with one of those games. They put an early game. I don't remember which one on the schedule, but, oh, yeah, it's Mavericks Suns on Wednesday. So you're basically looking at DeAndre Ayton versus Luka Doncic. I don't know why else those two teams would be on, you know, be on that game. But actually, the rookie matchup I'm most interested in, Wendell Carter Jr. and Jaren Jackson Jr. Yeah. I think those are the two players, and I'm interested to see them when they match up against each other. That'll be one I'll certainly have the DVR set for. Phoenix, Philadelphia. Embiid's tweet about DeAndre Ayton, you know, he don't compare him to me because I play defense.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling Embiid's going to really go at him.
Oh,
this
yeah.
year. And I don't know that DeAndre Ayton is ready for that.
No, I know for a fact he is not ready. He is not ready for that business because he doesn't play defense. We're going to take a quick second here, unless you have anything else that you wanted to get to.
Let me throw. I'm going to go quick. I'll go rapid fire here because I had Utah, Oklahoma City, which Utah knocking out Oklahoma City last year was a big surprise. This year, those two teams are on equal footing, and I think that'll be a good one. Boston, LA, I have to give it to you. I think that game will be, as much as I hate to admit it, the game will be a lot of fun. And then the entire Northwest Division, Denver, Minnesota, Utah, Portland, Oklahoma City. You could rank those teams 1 through 5, how they'll finish, and I think every combination would be believable. That's a lot of games throughout the season. Those teams will be matched up once or twice a week, and those are just going to be some great battles. I think it'll be fun.
Yep, absolutely. All right, we're going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, we're going to play everybody's favorite game. It's become kind of popular. Like, I have people randomly like sending me stuff that they really like.
Yeah, you should. Yeah, reply to the Twitter. Hop on Twitter and hit up Locked On NBA or me or Anthony, whichever one, and give us the little things you like about the NBA. Not the big stuff, the little stuff.
Yeah, just the tiny little nuggets. All right, 1 second.
The nuggets.
All right, and I meant to mention this at the end of last segment, but we were talking about the Northwest Division. I have an article coming out tomorrow for Silver Screen where I just basically picked a few games that I'm really looking forward to in the Lakers season. And one of my, I guess, quote-unquote games is the any Western Conference matchup because you have like 12 playoff teams and eight spots. So
there's three bad teams. Denver, LA, are you excited, compelled by that at all? And because you have the like Lonzo Murray stuff, or is that just not a...
No, I think it'll... You have the Lonzo Murray stuff. You have the LeBron Isaiah Thomas stuff.
Oh, gosh.
Dude, they're going to go out of their way to switch Isaiah onto LeBron as much as humanly possible. And it's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to, like, one of the things that I've always kind of, that's always endeared Rajon Rondo to me are, like, the big matchup kind of things, or, you know, he just kind of shows up for big moment things, and I think he's really going to go at Gary Harris that game, just to kind of, to take the load off of Lonzo to an extent there, so, yeah, I'm really looking forward to those games, and also, because, like, you and I get to talk crap, like, that's always fun.
There you go.
All right. Let's get this thing going, though. I'll let you start.
Okay.
What's at the top of your list this week?
It's timely. I love that the NBA owns Christmas and Martin Luther King Day. I love it. Those are two. It's like two, for me and us diehards, it's like two sports holidays.
Yeah.
And I think it's really cool. Christmas, I spend with the family, but I spend it watching basketball because there's always great games and my family loves basketball.
See, it's nice for me because my mother-in-law is not really a basketball fan, so I get to kind of escape for a little bit. I get to jump into the studio and really
you say, "Hey, I'm working.
Guys.
Sorry,
I'm working.
Guys.
I'm yeah. I have no choice here, guys. If I could be there with you, I would. But Linda, if you're listening, I love you. I promise. I also about Martin Luther King Day. I think." Culturally, it's significant that they own it outright, and they really go out of their way to Absolutely. Set the tone of importance on that day. And I really think I give the NBA a ton of credit for their understanding how important that is, and making sure the fans know, like, this is why we are so focused on this day.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, my first thing here is fan reactions to players, like, just working out.
Yeah, muscle. I had muscle watch last week. And this is along the same lines, but you're right. Yeah,
it's like all summer. In the Silver Screen and Roll mentions, I had fans concerned that they didn't see Lonzo Ball or Brandon Ingram in the Lakers gym nearly enough. And then on the show that I had Matt on last week, he was talking about how, well, we'll see when the first time we see LeBron in the Lakers gym, and today it finally happened. LeBron practiced with the Lakers, and Lakers Twitter was a buzz. It was
the Jokic. Gosh.
Did you tell the Jokic story on the air last time?
What story was that?
About how he was, it was like a 2-year-old photo. Did you tell that story on the air, or was that
about him working out in Serbia? I don't think I told the story, but it was straight out of the montage of Rocky IV, where he's working out in the old barn and running in the snow. That's Jokic goes back to his hometown of Sombor, Serbia, which is not a big town, and works out in a big empty field with an old man trainer who works out in his underwear.
That's incredible. All right. What's the next thing on your list here?
I like that players can't fight. this is in direct opposition to all the like crabby, nostalgic people that are like, back in the day, they'd clothesline you. If you're like, you know what? It's better that now you have to actually make a jump shot to win a basketball game. But also, there's also the hockey element here where at least a dozen times a year, a tweet will go viral where it's some hockey bro that's like, oh, so-and-so lost 4 teeth and still checked back into the game as if it's some macho thing. I'm glad that the NBA is all about the basketball, the game of basketball part of it. And the physicality plays into it. But I'm glad that there's no ogres in the league that have no skill, but they have a steady job because they punch people.
Yeah, I too agree that the NBA cares about the well-being of its players enough to say, oh, you have a concussion? You should probably sit down for a bit.
Yeah, that's smart. That is smart.
My next one here is rookies responding to their 2K ratings. Like every rookie, for some reason, thinks that they should be like an 85.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm going to prove y'all wrong again. You're a 78. Your counterpart that was drafted like 2 spots behind you is like a 77. I don't see what the big deal is here.
Yeah, I don't play 2K, so I can't speak to just how like important these ratings are. Mm-hmm. But they're like NBA over-unders. You know, you're playing to the center. You're playing to the average casual fan. And the average casual fan has no idea how good Joe Ingles is. So he's going to be like, oh, yeah, I'll give that guy a low grade. Mm-hmm. Because he looks like he's terrible.
Yeah, they do completely value like different things. Like, can you hit a pull-up Hezzy jumper, or can you make a rotation that actually helps your team win? All right, what's the next thing on your list?
I love how crappy visiting locker rooms are in these great state-of-the-art facilities. If you've ever been, so a lot of people haven't been behind the scenes, but the locker rooms in NBA arenas are state-of-the-art. Luxury design, like they bring in designers to make these things look cool, like they're out of some kind of cool details magazine or something. Where the visiting locker room is often worse than your high school gym. and yeah, I think it's cool. I think it's a great tradition that I've seen in every arena I've gone to. The visiting locker room is terrible.
The Celtics famously turned on the heater in the middle of the summer for the Lakers.
The showers have no hot water. The ceilings are like only 6 foot high, so everybody has to duck. It's great. I love the little gamesmanship. The benches are uncomfortable.
That's really good. That's a really, really good one. All right, mine is. I know I'm old now because NBA players come into new season. Like every season, they have some new hairdo that I understand less. And so like. And you know, you, like Brandon Ingram right now has this like kind of Jerry Curl kind of look that all of the Laker players roasted him for. And I was like, Well, I guess it doesn't look that bad. But then you look at, like, Elfrid Payton, his jumper
was, that
was like...
Yeah, that was bad.
legitimately was affected by the way he had his hair done.
It's funny how tied you can be, you know, like how emotionally tied you can be to a hairstyle. There's a guy, Kenrich Williams, got a two-way contract with New Orleans. I really like him out of TCU. He's from Dallas, and he was rocking the Lionel Richie. He calls it a shag. Apparently, it's real big in the DFW area, Dallas-Fort Worth area. Yeah. So shouts to Dallas-Fort Worth listeners, because I thought it was the coolest. I actually thought it was an awesome hairdo. It's basically a mullet, but like a Lionel mullet. It was dope.
They had they were photoshopping Brandon Ingram into like Rick James sets. Like it was great. it was really good. All right, what's your next one?
I like that the NBA allows videos to be shared. This is a simple one, but yes. I saw a tweet from Darren Rovell today saying that the NBA has 30 million followers on Instagram, and it was like two or three times as many as every other league. And I just love it because it's the dumbest and simplest thing for 2018. This isn't 1998. People are going to steal video and share them on the internet. Allow mm-hmm. them to. It grows your brand. I like that they do that.
Yeah, it's... Don't get me started. The Lakers have the opposite stance on that, and it's so stupid. It's so dumb. All right, my next one here. Are the age differences across the – like right now in Atlanta, Vince Carter is older than Trae Young's dad. And just thinking about the dynamic there, it just
makes
me
laugh. Let me ask you this, Anthony. Do you think – I think this is going to get weirder. Because the idea of somebody playing 21 years is, you know, there was guys that did it, 20 years ago. There's guys that played that long. But I wouldn't be surprised if guys start playing for 25, 30 years at some point over the next two decades, which means a player like Devin Booker possibly could have a 25-year career just with the advances in medicine and training and things like this. So you could end up getting even more. I think this could be even more extreme in the coming years. And I'm all for it.
Look, whatever this is going to be an insanely hot take. I'm pro PED if it keeps LeBron around.
don't make him better. Just keep him where he's at.
Just let him play forever. Inject as long as it doesn't like actually physically ail him. Like that's where the line gets drawn here. But keep him around forever. Baseball is like worse without PEDs. what's your next one?
So this is the last one for me. I got that I like that the NBA makes the NCAA look worse and worse with every passing year. Goodness. And of course, this year there was some news with the NCAA just inexplicably and somewhat independently coming up with some new rules in which they will allow certain players, but not all players, to enter the NBA draft, hire an agent, not get drafted, and then return to the NCAA. The controversy, of course, is because it's not all players, but only some players, that somebody has to be to determine which players get to go. And who did they pick? Not the NBA, but USA Basketball to determine who is an elite prospect and who is not.
Without warning.
There's at least a dozen conflicts of interest I can think of off the top of my head of allowing USA Basketball to pick these players. But also, they don't want that responsibility, nor are they equipped to take on that responsibility. The NCAA looks worse and worse with every passing year, and this idea that the NCAA is a pipeline for NBA talent, I think, is an antiquated idea, and quite frankly, looks worse with every year that goes by. I don't know that that's – I feel like those two entities, the NCAA and NBA, are growing further apart, and you know what? I'm interested to see how it plays out.
The NCAA has made me so cynical that I reached a point where I saw that news and I legitimately wondered if the NCAA bungled this on purpose so that they could kind of like lift their hands and say, look, we're trying to find, if we can't figure this out, how could we possibly figure out ways to pay the players? Like they're so corrupt and don't get me started on those guys. All right, my last one here. And it gets back to what we were talking about right at the beginning of the show. But the New York Knicks, like, they...
Just the Knicks. That's it? That's your... the Knicks. All right.
They're given every opportunity, every advantage that you could possibly want. And they're still the Knicks. And they remain the Knicks. And they play in what's called the Mecca of basketball. And they're seen as... And like, it's just... They get all of these marquee matchups. they should be able to acquire talent. And yet they can't. And they can't figure it out. And you know, it all goes back to James Dolan. He's a terrible owner. But really, like, it's such, I don't know how you pronounce it, Schadenfreude or whatever it's called, that it's, I can't help but laugh at that organization.
Yeah. The sad part is there's like a dozen organizations I feel like you could say this about. And so many organizations actually that it makes you wonder how much of this stuff is systemic in the way the NBA is set up and how hard it is to climb out of the gutter. And that's why some teams, I guess we don't have to name names, but some teams just seem to be in the cellar for decades on end.
I guess we have a few minutes here. I'm interested on why you think it's systemic and why it isn't just like an ownership problem.
No, well, I certainly do. Let me just nip that in the bud. I certainly think that teams that stay at the top largely deserve to, and teams that stay at the bottom largely deserve to. But because one player makes such a big difference, and because the number one pick makes such a big difference, that if you don't get that guy, or if you happen to get the number one pick and it's Anthony Bennett, it's just you're unlucky, you're unfortunate, mm-hmm. and it's very, very hard to crawl out of that cycle. There's a reason teams are there for three or four decades, but sometimes teams do get stuck on that treadmill for five, six, 7 years, and it not solely comes down to luck, but there's at least a little bit of luck that comes down to it, because not everybody gets to land Anthony Davis.
Yeah, that's all fair. All right, that'll do it then for this episode of the Locked On NBA Podcast Friday edition. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I hope you guys enjoy all of the shows that we put out there. Check them out every single day. We're working on ways to get through this next stretch of offseason. But continue hitting that subscribe button. Keep rating and reviewing the show with 5 stars so we can keep on doing this for you. Thanks, Adam, for hopping on. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you guys next week.